The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
The topic that I'm going to discuss is, of course, my favorite topic, which is Kabbalah. But I want to especially lay out for you some of the dynamics of Kabbalah as they directly relate to our lives and empower us to experience real personal growth. The Kabbalah has its own language. It's a metaphorical language, and very often people get stuck right there because they assume that Kabbalah is something that you study as you would study any other topic, when the truth is Kabbalah is really not a study. It's really ultimately a meditation. What the Arizal wrote and the Kabbalists wrote is really a metaphorical description, a kind of poetic description of an experience. And we need to take their poetry, take their metaphor, and try and translate it to what they were pointing to in terms of their own experience. Now, within the world of Kabbalah, there were actually different opinions of whether one should try and translate the metaphor into somewhat of a more philosophical or experiential language. And there were those who said, no, you should just keep it as a metaphor. And then those, obviously, who disagreed. I would say those who felt it should stay as a metaphor, I would say they probably said that because they were afraid that we would begin to assume that our translation of the metaphor is also the truth, when in fact even our translation of the metaphor is a metaphor, because all words are ultimately metaphors for concrete reality. They're just noises, just as you might have heard me explain numerous times, the noise water is just a noise, unless it points to an experience that we have with a liquid that flows out of our faucet. It's still just a noise. And so too the word God is just a noise, unless it correlates to a very real experience with the reality that that noise God points to. And therefore, what can happen is once we take the metaphors of the Kabbalah and then translate it into a different, you know, terminology, we need to remember that nonetheless, it's just terminology. Words are really metaphors, pointers, signs, indicating the way to the real experience that we can and must only know experientially and directly. Okay, well, so with that disclaimer, we begin. The Arizal, Rav Isaac Lurier, he explains, he offers us a metaphor of creation. And he says that in the beginning, all of existence was endless light. When God wanted to create you and me, he withdrew his light from the center, creating a vacuum wherein which he created vessels. He gave a thin ray of his endless light to these vessels, but these vessels couldn't take the light and they broke. And then the rest of history is all about tikkun, fixing these vessels so that they can someday receive this light. Today I only want to talk about the meaning of that light, the metaphor of the light. What does it refer to experientially? Now, it's important to understand that why is it that the Arizal talks about all of existence as an endless light? Why not simply as the endless one? In other words, the Kabbalah starts with a basic disclaimer that everything that we're going to say about God is not about God, but rather the light of God. Meaning everything we're going to say about God is not about God himself, but rather as God is so revealed to us, as God appears to us, everything we're going to say about God is ultimately relative to us. Now that's a very important point, a point that actually science today says, also says. Scientists will no longer say this is what an atom is. A true scientist will say we don't know what an atom is. We can only describe how an atom appears to us, relative to us, And so too the Kabbalists start with this basic premise that the truth that we are about to discuss is only the truth relative to us. It's not the truth from God's perspective. We can't have God's perspective because we're not God. But this is the truth as far as truth can be perceived by us relative to us. And therefore the Kabbalah talks about the endless light rather than the endless one. So all of existence is the endless light of God, meaning all of existence is a manifestation of God. All of existence. Okay? Now, question we need to then ask is, so what is the nature of this light? And the Kabbalists tell us that this light is endless. It's limitless. And being that this light is the light that exists, it is existence before time and before space, that would mean that this light transcends all the limitations of time and space. This light is the context, this light is the content of all, this light is the root, this light is the ground, this light is the essence. So what is this light? All right. And because this light transcends the limitations of time and space, then we need to understand that this light is able to be within every place and yet beyond every place 100%. Because a light that transcends the limitations of space can be 100% in every place and 100% beyond every place. You see, we don't quite understand that because we think in terms of space and limitations of space. So if I'm here, I can't be there. And if I'm 100% here, I certainly can't be 100% there. And yet the light of God can 100% be in every molecule or in every inch of the universe, every millimeter of the universe, 100%. The endless light, the divine inheres 100% within every millimeter, and yet 100% transcends every millimeter. And because this light transcends time, because this light exists before the limitations of time, well, that means that this light is 100% within every moment of our lives, and yet mysteriously, paradoxically, 100% beyond every moment of our lives. And since this light precedes all being and all beings, then this light has the ability to be 100% within each and every one of us, and yet 100% beyond each and every one of us. So the Kabbalah says that in the beginning all existence was endless light. This light is limitless, it's endless, it's limitless, it's a transcendental light. It's the root, the ground, the context, the essence of all. In addition, the Kabbalah teaches us that everything we do is about this light. Everything. Our whole life is only about this light. What we think, what we say, and what we do can either increase this light or decrease this light. In other words, the Kabbalists kind of describe us as having our finger on the dimmer switch of this light. We can either increase this endless light into the world, or we can decrease this endless light in this world. So, the question obviously needs to be answered. So what is this light? What could be the root, ground, and essence and context of all? What could be the cause of all, the purpose of all, the theme of all? And I will discuss in greater length next time, but for now, just trust me, this light is unconditional love. In the beginning, all of existence was endless light. That endless light is hinting to unconditional love. Unconditional love is the light of God. Unconditional love is the manifestation of God. When we love each other, and when we feel loved, then we are experiencing the presence of God in our lives. I'm not saying that God, that love is God, but I'm definitely saying, or Kabbalah is definitely saying, that God is manifest in love Love is the light of God. And that shouldn't surprise us, because why is mankind so obsessed with love? So many poems and so many films and so many songs and so many plays about love. Because somehow deep inside us we intuit that in fact love would be an appropriate purpose for the universe, an appropriate cause for the universe. That unconditional love is in fact the root, the ground, the context, the essence of all. So now when the scientists seek the substance of life, the scientists try to figure out what are we made of. So they have decided that we are made of energy. In other words, what is the substance, that which stands beneath it all? Substance, that which exists beneath it all. The substance is energy. But rather, we would learn from Torah and Kabbalah that the substance is love. We are made of love. Certainly, we all know that we are born in, out of an act of love. Whether that was true love or not is unfortunately another story sometimes. But we are made of love. At the rock bottom, the bedrock of existence is unconditional love. And since that unconditional love is an endless light, we understand, because unconditional love is never enough. You can never say, okay, I got enough love, let's go on and do something else. Love is not a destiny, love is a journey. We can love each other more and more and more and more. Love can never be exhausted. It is the endless light of God. It is the endless presence of God. It is existence itself. And when we said that endless light, because this endless light precedes time and space, it transcends the limitations of time and space. Well, in fact, that is the quality of love. Love transcends the limitations of time and space. I think we've all experienced having that amazing date where we suddenly look at our watches and we can't believe it. No way. No way. It's 5 a.m. I mean, we met at 8 o'clock. No way. We couldn't be speaking for 9 hours. It feels like minutes have gone by. When you get that kind of a date, that's a pretty good sign. But sometimes dates, you know, you look at your watch and you can't believe it. No, my watch must have stopped. It can't be. It was only 10 minutes, but it feels like 10 hours. We just like, every minute is painstakingly long. Love transcends time. When you love somebody, there's always time. And when you demonstrate love for someone, you are 100% in that moment with that person. It says that Yaakov, our father Jacob, the patriarch Jacob, because he loved Rachel so much, he worked for her for 7 years, but it felt like but a few days. Love transcends time. Love also transcends space. The Talmud says that a couple that loves each other can sleep on a bed which is the width of the edge of a razor. Their love transcends the limitations of space, and they could sleep on the edge of a razor. But if a couple do not love each other, then even if their bed is as wide as the universe, it will be too small for them. There's also a story about the Baal Shem Tov. When the Baal Shem Tov was traveling, he was the founder in the 1700s of the Hasidic movement, and he was in a wagon stuffed with his students. There was no room, and he sees a fellow on the street hitchhiking. So the Baal Shem Tov calls over the fellow and tells him to jump in. As the guy is about to jump into the wagon, he realizes there's no space, and he says, "Are you sure there's space?" And the Baal Shem Tov says, "Of course there's space. All we have to do is love each other just a little more, and there'll be plenty of space." And in fact, this endless light was manifest in the temple, especially when the Kohen Gadol, when the high priest, did the Yom Kippur service, and when he was in the Holy of Holies, he enunciated the special name of God. Suddenly, although the Temple Mount was packed like sardines, suddenly everyone had enough space around them to completely prostrate themselves on the floor, feeling a radius of empty space of around 8 feet around themselves. Suddenly, we were exposed to the endless light, the endless presence, the endless love, the power that transcends the limitations of time and space. And as we mentioned, this endless light, being transcendental, has the ability to be 100% in this moment, and yet 100% beyond this moment, 100% here, and 100% there, 100%. That's unbelievable. But that is, in fact, the miracle of love. Because when you love somebody, your love does not become divided by the people you love. I remember when my wife and I gave birth to our first daughter, and of course I loved her so much. And then when my wife conceived and was pregnant with our second daughter, I was very challenged. I was very worried. Well, how will I now divide my love between this first child that I so love? How will I deal with taking 50% away from her and now having to divide my 100% love into 50% love between these two children? And then, of course, what will happen when I have three children and we're blessed with four children, and God willing, thank God, we have seven children? Does our love divide up into seven parts? The miracle and the mystery of love, because it is in fact the manifestation of God, it is the presence of God, the transcendental presence of God. The miracle of love is that we can love each one of our children 100% without detracting from loving our other children 100%. And now we can understand what the Torah says when it says that we are created in the image of God. Because really, the image of God is the image of love. And the truth is, the image of God is not a man, the image of God is not a woman. Rather, if you look carefully at the verse in the book of Genesis, it says that God created male and female together in his image. In other words, when a man and woman are united, that is when you truly see the image of God. And that is why at a wedding, under the chuppah, under the marriage canopy, we recite the blessing, "Blessed are you, God, who has created the human being in your image." Why would we say such a blessing under the canopy, a wedding canopy? Wouldn't it be more appropriate to say such a blessing at birth? But the truth is, the birth of the baby is not the birth of the image of God. The image of God is the image of love. It is the union of opposites, which is the miraculous power of love. And when Judaism talks about the theme of life, our goal is to serve God, what that really means is to serve love. That's what it means, right? If a person is thinking, speaking, and doing love, loving each other people, loving God, this becomes a manifestation of God's love, God's presence. In fact, the name of God, Yud He Vav He, is the gematria, is the numerical value of 26, right? 26. And the numerical value of love, Ahava, is 13. And, of course, you can't have one for love to happen. So when you have two loves, I love you and you love me, then you have two times love, two times 13, which gives you 26, which gives you the full manifestation of God, the name of God, the Yud He Vav He. So what does it mean to serve God? Most people think that God is some being floating in outer space over there. And to serve God means I have to do what he wants me to do, and if I don't do what he wants me to do, he's going to step on me. But the truth is, to serve God means to serve in manifesting the presence of God on earth, which is synonymous with to serve love. And in fact, when we talk about making love, it's actually quite not quite the right wording. We don't make love. Rather, we reveal love. When two people love each other, the love in their heart and the love that they're feeling, that's filling them and embracing them, that is the presence of God. That is the essence of life. And that's why we're here. And that is our service. So, but once we understand that the theme of life is endless love, unconditional love, then we need to realize that the conditions that allow for the manifestation of unconditional love will be conditions that will be against love. Now, this is a very important point. Because if, in fact, all of existence is a manifestation of love, and love is the theme of life, how come there's so much unloving energy in the universe? How come there's so much war and so much hatred in the world? Well, it's important to understand that if, in fact, the theme of life and the purpose of life is a manifestation of God's presence, which is synonymous with the manifestation of unconditional love, then the conditions that allow for the manifestation of unconditional love is precisely war, hate, resentment, anger, jealousy, competition, because that's when you can demonstrate unconditional love. If all the conditions in your relationship are for love and do not challenge love, when would unconditional love have an opportunity to become manifest? And therefore, what we see over here, which is very interesting, before I mentioned that in the beginning all of existence was endless light, when God wanted to create you and me, He created a space within His light, created vessels and gave light to these vessels as the vessels broke down. Why is there breakdown in this theme? Why is there chaos in the theme of love? And that's because for unconditional love to become manifest, then we should expect life to be filled with challenges to love. And, you know, I remember my wife, when she was involved with astrology many years ago, her commitment to Judaism, very often people would come to her and ask her to counsel them regarding someone they were dating. And in astrology, you're able to take someone's chart and put it on top of their spouse's or their potential spouse's chart and look for something called squares. Now, where there's squares in the chart, in the diagram of their chart, is where there will be conflict and tension. And so very often what people are hoping to do is, by comparing the charts of the person they're dating, see if there are a lot of squares, which would then imply that there'd be a lot of conflict and tension. Thereby, they would conclude this is not a good idea. My wife would never do that. She would never counsel a couple based on astrology, because her belief at this time, pre her knowledge of Judaism, was perhaps the light of love will be manifest most by people who have conflict in their life. And it makes sense. A couple that have no challenge in their life, I like what you like what I like, we get together, we get along so well, we never have conflict, never arguing, never misunderstanding. My gosh, when would there be an opportunity to demonstrate unconditional love if there is never any conditions against our love? So, since the endless light is existence, endless light is the root, the ground, the essence, the context, the theme of life, then we can expect within this endless light chaos, conflict, problems. And in fact, the problems in life turn into the very raw material that enable us to experience and to demonstrate and to serve unconditional love. It's important to understand that the Kabbalists refer to this endless light, this unconditional love is endless light. And love is a light. Now, light is interesting because you don't really see light. Light enables you to see. When you see a ray of light in your bedroom coming through the window, it's not really a ray of light you're seeing, but a ray of dust. The light is illuminating dust, and it gives you the sense that you're seeing a ray. But the truth is, light itself cannot be seen. It enables you to see. And so to love is really a light that enables you to see. Although most people have probably heard the saying, love is blind, that's not true. Infatuation is blind. But true love is a light that empowers us to see. It lets us see what's real. It lets us see what matters. It lets us see the real meaning of life and the real opportunities in our life. So to just sum up, in the beginning, all of existence, the Kabbalists tell us, in the beginning all of existence was an endless light. All of existence is a manifestation of God. This endless light is the root, the essence, the context, the cause, the purpose, the theme of all life. Since this light exists before time and space, it transcends the limitations of time and space and therefore is able to be 100% within every moment, in every place, in every person, while being 100% beyond every moment, every place, and every person. And the whole theme of life is to serve this light. What is this light? Experientially, it's love. It's unconditional love. And we have come into this world because of love, for the purpose of love. Our service to God is to love. And that love in our hearts that we share, the more we let that love flow into the world, the more we are in fact serving God's true purpose, the more we are bringing the presence of God into the world. And that unconditional love is described as a light, because the more we love, the more we're able to see what is real and what is forever important.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.